This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, 8 o'clock hour here at Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle. It is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Danny O'Neill, we just saw him wandering the halls and dragged him in here. Hey, buddy.
Hi, how are you?
What's going on?
Not too much.
Huge, huge football weekend, man, in this
town. It's a great football weekend.
Cougs tonight, Huskies tomorrow, Seahawks on Sunday. That's all three with a lot to play for.
Can you, the Cougs have beaten the USC Trojans two of the last three meetings. It's the only time in history, in recorded history, that you can say that about the Washington State Cougars.
Wow.
Because I went back and counted it up, and like Pete's record against the Cougs in his 10 years there.
Move on.
It was
next.
It was 8-1, okay. And they were outscored by a combined like 362-143.
66-3 or 63-0?
Whoa.
There was a point.
Pete took a knee in the first half, and I yelled at him.
At the end of the second quarter.
And he came back and yelled back at me.
Is that true?
Yeah, I've never really spoken about that.
Hold on a second. Danny, I know you're our guest, but hold on.
Yeah, it happened.
Please explain what happened.
I was sitting front row of the student section by
what
the
year
tunnel.
Is this?
2008. And Pete Carroll, USC was up like 45-0 going into the half. They had the ball with the chance to score. And Pete took a knee in the red zone just to like mercifully let the Cougs get to the half. And I was like so embarrassed by that. That as he came to the tunnel... Score the points! It's disrespect! Score the points! And he comes, he puts, what? What? And he's like, you want six? We could add six. We could add three. I was like, then take the points. You're embarrassing us. And he's like, I'm trying to be respectful. No, you're trying to embarrass us. And you're succeeding. And that was that.
I never.
10 years.
We've been doing the Pete Carroll show for how long?
Because I sat in the room with him, I've been like, oh, man, I hope Pete Carroll doesn't recognize me. It was like a 5 to 10 seconds, but it was a bona fide screaming match.
Now, he heard you? That's the part.
I was front row, first person on the tunnel.
Not only heard you, but responded.
So he's heading into the tunnel.
Twice.
And I mean, yeah, there was some language, and it wasn't a good
thing. I can't believe we've been doing the Pete Carroll show for how long now, and you've never brought this up. You've been the
Very
producer of the show for 4 years.
Because I used to have to sit in there during the Pete Carroll show. I didn't want to have to face the music about my actions that day.
Oh, you're going to face
and
him now.
And my anger was actually at Paul Wolf, not Pete Carroll.
Right. But you were taking it out on Pete.
It was as embarrassing a moment as the Cougs have ever had. He took a knee in the first half.
Man.
See, here's the part about it that's funny to me, though, is because I've heard other people be that way. How do you think Jim Moore, the Super Cougs, reaction was to that? Because he had a very strong reaction to the exact same thing. And he went up, and after Pete was hired, thanked Pete for taking a knee and for showing mercy and complimenting him.
It was some backhanded mercy, Danny.
I don't think I've ever going to be rooting for the Hawks to win more. It has nothing to do about anything
other
than I
want
to be able to talk to Pete about it in a good mood and maybe even bring Kyle into it. And if Pete is like, Sean McVay, who remembers every last detail.
Right. I don't know.
I'm sure Pete remembers
it. The text toy's not buying this, by the way. 710-710, powered by Coors Light.
Or maybe they went for it and didn't kick the field goal. Whatever it was, it was disrespectful.
They took a knee at the end of the season.
My four-year-old likes to make up stories too, Kyle. That's cool. People aren't believing that this happened, Kyle.
Whoa. They absolutely believe this happened.
Great. Well, they believe Pete took the knee. I don't think they believe that Kyle and Pete had this exchange.
No, I absolutely believe this, and I think that we should make this happen on Monday on the Pete Carroll Show.
Wow. Mr. Non-Confrontation himself.
I know.
Put himself square in the middle of the biggest confrontation of the year.
What do you think Kyle had to drink at that point? People should know, by the way, that Kyle is dressed in his Cougar gear, which means he is wearing a sweatshirt that has got to be from 1994. He also threw his contacts out the window yesterday for some reason, and so he's wearing glasses today. Kyle looks like he's about to go to sleep.
True. All of this.
Kyle's wearing pajamas and glasses. He looks like he does right, like he's about to go to sleep.
All of this, including
text
that story.
Text from my buddy Marty. He was right there. He says Pete. Pete took the knee.
All of this is totally unrecognizable.
This is just amazing. Anyway, that's not why we have you in here, Danny.
It's disrespectful. Score the points.
Going to the Husky game tomorrow?
Yeah, I am.
And
yeah.
What are we expecting?
19-point
favorites?
Well, that's... I don't get into the lines on any of the games. I think Washington.
Why
I think
not? You got a guy that gives locks every week.
I know. But that sort of thing. Look, it's college football, and there's way more unpredictability. I actually think Washington is due for a breakout game. They haven't had it yet, and there's so much. There is a lot of talent on this team. They've had some difficulties on their offensive line. Jake Browning has had a tough start to the season. We were one penalty away from having a discussion about his future being front and center. If that pick, not the one he did throw, but the one that was negated by the roughing the passer penalty, if that pick stands, that game looks incredibly different for a lot of different reasons, namely because they don't score that final, the third touchdown they have. I think Washington's due for a breakout game, and I think Arizona State, while they've got some talent, they were probably, of the teams in the Pac-12, they're the one whose record is most hollow at this point.
Where will there be more nervous energy amongst the 70,000 or so people sitting in these two beautiful buildings Saturday and Sunday? Will there be a little bit more nervous energy and angst if things don't turn out quickly here for both Jake, if he throws a pick, his fifth of the season in that first half, right, and you feel some of that? Or will it be over there off Royal Brougham with Mr. Wilson and an offense that never starts fast, a season that really, even in their heyday, didn't particularly start fast, and if they don't get it going, where do you think you're going to feel some more of that tension?
I think it's at CenturyLink. I think it's with the Seahawks, because I think that there is a possibility, and I lean toward the panic side of this, that they're not very good, and that for all of the different things that have happened, and you can paint a picture that they're going to come home and win and then go to Arizona, it'll be 2-2, everything will be okay. There's not one thing that they've done this season other than get interceptions from their secondary that you feel good about. Washington plays a ton of defense. I mean, for whatever you want to say and however, they absolutely steel-toed defense, and they're going to bludgeon you into submission. And you know you have that from them. I think that their offense is better than it's looked. I think that line will show some progress, and that's entirely based on faith at this point, because their offensive line has not been good so far, and Jake's been bad. But I think Washington, I have less uncertainty about the trajectory of their season than I do about Seattle.
That makes sense. The problem with Washington, look, they should win this game. I mean, they're just a better team, and they're at home, and they should win. The thing that I think leads to the nervous energy there is just the fact that there's no margin for error.
It's the quarterback, man. I mean, it's hard when you've got a quarterback that you feel is shaky and you're like, I don't know how this is going to go because it seems like his decision making right now has gotten worse instead of gotten better. Like that's watching the games. And look, I'm a Jake Browning fan and I'm rooting for him. And I don't want to see Jacob Hayner, because I think if Jake Hayner comes in, you're not going to make the Rose Bowl. You don't have a backup who's going to come in there and your team is going to end up getting to the college football playoff because finally he's playing. Their chances at being and having a good season and making the Rose Bowl or the college football playoff depend on Jake Browning playing better than he has so far. I think he can, but the trend so far has been his decision making. The interception that he did throw, the one that was not negated, it was unbelievable. Utah hadn't done anything to that point, and you gift wrapped it.
What's on the line for the Seahawks on Sunday?
It's whether this season matters or it's rebuilding. I mean,
that's not an exaggeration.
If they go 0-3 and they're going to Arizona, you go and beat Arizona and you're 1-3, you're still not.
And playing the Rams.
You're still not sniffing the conversation about, hey, can you get to the playoffs? You're in such a hole at that point. They haven't been 0-3 since 2002. All of the different struggles that you've seen from the Jim Mora year, from Holmgren's final season, they haven't been 0-3 since 2002.
Wow.
And you look at the way that they've played, and specifically on offense, it's hard to see a bright side. I know that they've been in all the games, and it's been on the road, and Pete Carroll typically, and people have said, somebody was like, they always start like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's never felt like this before. You've never had an uncertainty about whether they're any good or not, really since 2011.
Well, even the year that Russ got hurt, I mean, I think there was just that element, their offense looked so inept, and Russ was hobbling around.
They were 3-1.
Yeah. I know, but that you still, like, there was that issue of, are they even going to be able to do it, and they got destroyed. I don't know. Yeah, you're right. It hasn't been quite like this.
No, it hasn't. And it's got a new voice trying to call these plays. And you got a new voice that's now sandwiched between the two power brokers, and that's a franchise quarterback and a head coach. And Brian Schottenheimer yesterday, pretty blunt when meeting with the media, that he's got to get this thing figured out first and foremost with himself.
I go back to me. I need to be better. I'll do a better job, working hard on it. And, again, excited to play Dallas this weekend.
You think he's better this weekend? You think there's a chance that a play caller can call out of 65 snaps, can he find 5 or 10 that are just true difference-making, whether they're situational, Danny, or just getting the quarterback to really believe in this plan and the people around him? Do you believe that he's a big part of what the outcome is going to be come Sunday?
I do, and putting Russell in situations that he's confident in. I think that's his challenge. It's not to call better plays. It's to call better plays for Russell. Because I think through the first two games, what I've seen from him is Russell is a quarterback who lacks a true conviction and confidence in what is being called, except when they sort of take the handcuffs off and he's able to accelerate the play. And I don't even think
And then they call timeout and maybe don't like the calls that he makes.
Well, but that part, look, I get that part. I get the timeout. The timeout is not the problem, that all of a sudden Russell was doing something to work and they needed to yank on his collar to make sure that, hey, you call the plays. They were misaligned. They didn't want to rush into something that they were going to have a mistake at a crucial juncture of the game. I look at it, but here's the thing, is that the only point that they moved the ball well there was when they were down double digits and they accelerated the tempo and he was calling more.
Yeah, what's going to be fascinating, Danny, and we've all watched this now for so many years, and we were chatting a lot about Russell, and I'm sure on your guys' show this week you were too, is there so long Russell could play this game and just say, you know what, let's get to the late rounds. You know what, I'll jab, I'll hold, I'll do whatever. I'm not going to expose my chin, and I'm not necessarily going for your chin. The first 10 rounds. Let's get to the end of this thing and let's see where you're at with my team and let's see where my playmaking is with your quarterback. And to me, that is the most fascinating aspect of this season. Really beginning come Sunday, because Dak Prescott last year did not play particularly well. When his O-line was struggling, when he didn't have his running back, he played in the box. He just didn't play with any of the confidence. And right now, I think he also is in a little in-between spot. Is he going to come out and be the aggressor? Is he going to throw some punches? Do you want Russell to be more aggressive, knowing that if you expose your chin, he may get knocked down? You may get a pick. You may get, you know, some of these negative plays that they have avoided for so long. You want Russell and Shoddy to come out in those early rounds and be more aggressive come Sunday?
I don't think there's any choice, and here's why. The makeup of this team has changed, and it's changed in some ways inevitably, that when your quarterback takes up a larger square footage, a larger footprint under your salary cap, you're not going to have as many parts around him. Now, there's been mistakes along the way that have resulted in this team being a little bit undermanned, but they don't have the defense. I don't think anybody looks at that defense and thinks that, hey, you know what, this is 2011 and all the stars are in place and they just need to come together. They've got some players. Trey Flowers looks like he's going to be a player, and you certainly have a couple of really, really good linebackers. They can't play the same way. They can't play the same way that they did back then, because the defense isn't as resilient and you can't just count on them keeping you in the game until the fourth quarter. I think you've got to take some chances earlier in games.
I'm kind of torn on that, because I understand what you're saying. It all makes logical sense. And yet, in the last two games that they've lost, they've been right in it in the fourth quarter. And Russell Wilson, as much as I love him, and I'm not crushing him for every play he's made, once fumbled a snap, which didn't give them the opportunity to go down and either kick a field goal to tie it or maybe go down for the win. And then in the next game, threw a pick and then a fumble the next possession. I mean, it seemed like they were deploying the same strategy of
Russell
wait and wait, we'll try to win it late. The problem is Russell just didn't win it late.
Case Keenum and Mitchell Trubisky.
I mean, that certainly helps the argument.
You're going to face better quarterbacks down the road.
Are you sure?
And they're also, like, as much as they
How could you?
As much as they had a chance on Monday night, and I agree with you, that was, you had given yourself no margin for
none.
That was, if he pulls off that comeback, that is on his list of not the most improbable.
I kind of expected him to.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. When he had the ball, and that right before he threw the pick, right before they called the timeout for no reason. I don't care about some misalignment. You're wasting a timeout with 7 minutes left in a one-score game. It's ridiculous. Right before they called the timeout, when he was marching down the field, I was like, I think they're going to win this game. Mm. I honestly had that feeling at that moment, like, yeah, I think they're probably going to win this game. And then he threw the pick, and it was like kind of all over at that point. But right until he threw the pick, I thought he was going to win it.
I thought they were going to tie it, and then they were going to give it up late.
Really?
That's what I thought was going to happen.
You thought Mitchell Trubisky was going to go down and make a big play?
Mitchell Trubisky scored on a touchdown on his opening possession in each of the past two games, which is something the Seahawks have not done in 31 straight.
Yeah, but he hasn't scored any other. But he hasn't had any other touchdowns. That's his problem.
Well, he had another one in the fourth quarter. It's two straight games.
Just say that out loud. Just say that one more time because I got a little bit lost. Say that stat one more time.
Mitchell Trubisky has led the Bears to a touchdown on the team's opening possession in each of the past two games, something the Seattle Seahawks have not done in 31 consecutive regular season games.
That's it?
That's mind-blowing.
It's only been 31?
31 consecutive regular season games.
Well, in baseball, that wouldn't be that many.
I think that's even more days in the between wins for the Browns. I think I think that's close.
Dude, speaking of that, I might be eating some crow on that
Uh-oh.
One.
What happened?
Well, I made a Johnny Manziel-like prediction about Baker Mayfield.
Oh, he's good.
He is really good. He looked great. I didn't think he had the personality for the NFL.
Really?
I did not think. I thought that when he had points of success, that the way he was going to celebrate that attention mm-hmm. would be counterproductive. And I think there are still some questions.
Yeah, I mean, he just had the success. Let's see how he celebrates.
I didn't like the underwear ad that he had with the freaking tiger. Yeah. Like that, I wasn't a big fan of that, but he looked awesome last night.
Because I'm the king of some awkward segues, I will say this. The one thing about Baker last night that did jump out to me, and I think a lot of people just as you watch that, was how much his team loved having him out there. And when he was at Oklahoma, from the walk-on and everything else, anybody that ever went around that program, the team just loved him. It reminded me, you know, of Deshaun Watson at Clemson. They just love him. He's just magnetic. This guy I feel great about. And I'll tell you, that number three come Sunday has got to have some of that vibe. He's got to make it go. With little Joey Hunt in front of him and big DJ Fluker to his right, which will be a great little Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger look between those two. Maybe J.R. Sweezy at left guard. We'll see if Ethan can come back. With Jerron Brown, guy he's not terribly comfortable throwing to, with a 270-pound rookie tight end, it's been awesome. Right, with an old guy that can't run like he used to, the tin man that they got to crank up with all the oil. All of those guys, when he runs into that huddle at 1 o'clock on Sunday, they've got to feel his juice. Like, we are good. We are going to win. Don't you even worry about it. And I got this thing. Because I don't know the last 2 weeks out on the road if you've necessarily felt that vibe from Russell Wilson.
Do they go to DJ Fluker before the game? Like a mom with her older son saying, you've got to take care of Joey. Like, don't let them pick on little Joey Hunt. Like, DJ, don't, you make sure they don't put him in the pile and leave him there.
It's going to be like in Days of Confused where she goes, hey, don't pick on what's his name, Mitch? Right?
Mitch.
Kramer. He's a little smaller than those other boys.
Butt's going to be purple before the day is through.
You know what they do? Remember John Henderson from Jacksonville Jaguars? Remember that?
The one that Tobeck hit in the ribs?
Yeah. Oh, yes, he did. But he was also the one that liked to get slapped in the face by the trainers before the game.
Was it John Henderson? What was the guy next to him?
Oh, Marcus Stroud. Those are two bad boys right there. Yes, I could just imagine the Seahawks trainers come Sunday to Fluker like, all right. Here you go. I'm going to get you pumped up and ready. You got to protect Joey and you got to protect Russ. I don't know which one's taller, but you got to protect both of them.
I'm sorry. I got to cut us off. Can we get back to Kyle yelling at Pete Carroll? I'm sorry. Like, this is cool analysis and Seahawks, whatever. Kyle, you yelled at Pete Carroll and you got him to respond to you and you held this from us for 6 years.
Quite intentionally.
What the heck?
It's been one of my biggest fears that this would come out because I just didn't want to have to face the music on my actions that day. But that was the worst moment in WSU football history.
That's a low point.
They lost back-to-back games like 128-3, I think, 66-3, and then 63-0.
Who was the other team?
Cal, maybe?
Mike, there's a new audience every 15 minutes.
Right, so. If people didn't hear this 20 minutes ago, In 2008, Kyle was in school at Wazoo as Pete Carroll's team took a knee inside the red zone at the end of the first half, mm-hmm. just to be nice.
I was watching that.
Kyle let loose a string of profanities that Pete Carroll heard and responded to.
Okay, here it is. Number 6 USC at Martin Stadium, 69-0. The following week's Stanford, 58-0.
Jeez.
66-13. 31-0.
How did they ever fire Paul Wolf after that?
66-3 was
the Cal game. They went one more.
Game.
How many more years with him? Two more years with Paul Wolf?
So at one point it was 193-13. There was a three game stretch where you were outscored by 180 points.
It was a complete embarrassment. And people were still supporting Paul Wolf. I wanted him fired. I wanted them to lose that game 100-0. And Pete was taking a knee in the first half.
So
like
maybe
in the red zone. I'll pull up the moment, but they were in our territory, like deep. And he was just like,
maybe
this is
he
too
was doing it to try to keep Paul Wolf there at Wazoo, so it was an easier
I think
win.
Everybody
every year.
Wanted Paul Wolf.
Maybe he, the other coaches don't want him gone. I mean, you want to at least make it close enough so that you could keep winning.
When Jim Moore went and thanked Pete Carroll for taking that knee that infuriated Kyle, when he did that, Pete's response was, "There wasn't a play we ran where I thought we weren't going to score." There, every time we snapped it, I thought we were going to score. And he was worried about it. He said this as if he were crestfallen of like, what do you do? How do you play in a game where every play you run, you're going to score?
Can you even picture Kyle then?
Yeah, I absolutely can. Yes, because I've seen Kyle at Cougar games.
Running off
been
the
once.
Field. I think that's the old tunnel they had. He's running out the old tunnel that I think is the corrugated metal. And Kyle's hanging over just...
It was 41-0.
Just dog cussing him.
He says it's disrespectful is what you said to him? It's disrespectful.
I said that you're embarrassing. You are trying to embarrass us.
He's literally doing the opposite of that.
Was he, though? 41-0 at half.
Oh, man, that's good. I can't wait to talk to Pete about this. We'll see what he says. Obviously, he remembers the moment because he's talked about it with Jim. The question is, does he remember topping the
conversation? So, yeah, he was heading into the tunnel, and he kind of could hear out of the corner, and he put his hands up like, what? What do you say? And then he came just two steps out of his path because we were right on the corner of the student section. And, we had a – I mean, it was like a 10-second exchange maybe.
But he said
– We were exchanging competitive thoughts.
Compete every day, man.
It was like
compete on everything.
Shoddy. It was just – we were exchanging competitive shots, but there was mutual respect.
Kyle, you worked here when Pete Carroll got hired.
Yes.
You have been a board op here since 2009.
Yep.
You have –
What else are you hiding?
You have been Kyle, the producer of this show for over 4 years. You've sat in
on
numerous Pete Carroll shows.
Kyle, what else are you hiding from us? On a day you're wearing a 1989 sweatshirt and your
pajamas.
Glasses.
On a day you're wearing pajamas to work and look like you're about to go to sleep.
I'm wearing a Coug throwback sweatshirt, and as we said, I had an emotional moment in the car yesterday. I threw my contacts out the window. I got home. I realized I had no contacts to replace them with. And then I was like, oh, no.
If you just messed up your hair a little bit, you would be a guy who's going to sleep. Or maybe just woke up.
Yeah, absolutely.
See if you can make that happen. Danny, thanks for coming by,
man.
You're
the best.
You bet.
Seahawks going to win this week?
I think so.
I think they are, too.
24-20. That's what I think is going to be the
closer game. I feel like they win it and they actually like look good and win.
Yeah.
Like they win by 7-10 points, something like that. And you're like, oh, good. Now on to Arizona and let's see what happens.
We're also going to be, if anybody wants to look for me, tomorrow, 1974 fiber foam boat called the Honey Bucket.
Okay.
We'll be tooling around Lake Washington.
Nice. For everybody out sailgating, take a look for Danny and the Honey Bucket. Thanks, buddy. We appreciate it.
Talk to you soon.
All right. There's Danny O'Neill, who we found wandering the hallways and decided to drag in here to hang out with us.
So nice. Danny? We roped him in for 23 minutes.
I know. It was only supposed to be 5 or 10. I think the Kyle story just ended up at, like ensorcelling him, and he couldn't leave.
Does it change the way you look at that guy? Knowing that he's
the glasses and sweatshirt, honestly, have taken more. Like, I see when we go to spring training and stuff, Kyle and I always stay in the same house.
Right.
So I see Kyle, like, right before he goes to bed. And this is what he gets home. He gets into his comfies. He throws on, like, a pair of plaid sweatpants and an old school sweatshirt like this.
I was wearing plaid pajama pants yesterday.
Right.
Yes,
and then he throws on these glasses, and you're like, oh, it's going to bed, Kyle. And now he's wearing that at work, and I can't take him seriously.
Well,
and this Pete Carroll revelation just changes everything.
Casual Friday Coug fan Kyle mixed with threw my contacts out the car window in a horrible
mixed
mistake.
With exposing your soul and burying your soul with us and sharing some sin in your life when you gave it to Pete. It's great.
All right, we got to talk a little bit about what happened last night. A kid who was winning with confidence, and it started long before he ever got there. That, and I want to play a little bit more sound from Brock's guy, Brian Schottenheimer, next on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Going to need some dirty deeds on Sunday. Seahawks got to try to beat Dallas. Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN. Seattle this hour brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Mariners playing tonight. They'll take on the Rangers. 5 o'clock start pregame at 4 here on 710 ESPN. Seattle that bumps the Coug game over to KTTH. So if you want to listen to the Cougs tonight, they will be on AM 770. Before we come back to the Seahawks, Brock, just a couple minutes on what we all got a chance to see last night. It was an awesome night. Baker Mayfield coming in the Browns end years of frustration.
And with great pride, I say, the Browns are in victory formation. Baker Mayfield takes a knee. Count it down, everybody. everybody. The Browns are winners tonight. And the drought is over. Led by the number one overall draft choice, Baker Mayfield.
There he is. Baker Mayfield, your new starting quarterback for the maybe not starting quarterback. Hugh Jackson's not sure yet.
I mean, I'm going to watch the tape and make the right decision, the best decision for the organization and for a football team moving forward. That's my job.
All right, he's got to say that. I mean, look, Hugh Jackson's going to get a lot of grief because he's a bad coach, and he deserves a lot of grief. This one's not his fault, though. He can't just, like, Tyrod Taylor's got a concussion. He's got to talk to him about it. Like, he can't burn him by letting him hear in the media that he lost his gig, right?
He's got to cover for it. Actually, yes, he can.
Really?
Yes.
Come on.
He could talk to Tyrod between now and then.
He can just come
out. And you know what? Tyrod's been around the block long enough. He's a mature enough guy. Tyrod knows.
Here's
my bet. That locker room knows.
I'll bet you
anything. Anybody that's been around that organization knows. So you're not fooling anybody by saying that.
No, but he's just saying it for the night. He's being like any baseball manager. Look, and then he's going to – the same way when baseball managers need to talk to somebody who's been demoted or something, they just want to do it in person, and I don't blame him for that for one second.
All right.
Especially with Tyrod Taylor, who's a great guy by all accounts, and who I bet will play again for the Browns.
Over the course of the season?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like, he will come in and probably play again for the Browns, and you can't just lose him like that. So I got no problems with Hugh Jackson clearly lying to everybody that he needs to watch the tape. But, man, I'm psyched about Baker, and I think that Browns team is fun to watch. I like Baker. I like his attitude. And I liked it last year. Baker Mayfield to me is the antithesis, Brock, of all of that NBA style, I just want to play with my buddies, create a super team, and win. Hey, Chris Bosh. Hey, Dwayne Wade. Hey, LeBron. Hey, you guys want to get together and create a great team? Nobody can beat us. It's going to be so much fun. Let's go form a super team.
It's hard to do that.
The
NFL model's not
that anyway.
Yeah,
I was going to say, you can't really compare the two.
I understand that. Okay, let me say this. It's the polar opposite of your boy, Eli Manning, saying, I want to go to the Giants. I don't want to be here in San Diego. I don't like that. I want to be in New York. I want to control everything. And what did Baker do when he was asked by Cleveland radio host before the draft whether he'd be cool in Cleveland?
You get the call, and the Browns select you. What are they getting?
They're getting a winner. They're getting somebody that's going to turn that franchise around. They're getting somebody that no matter what happens, no matter what anybody else on the outside thinks of that franchise, that I'm going to put belief and I'm going to put new life into that. And I'll do everything I can to win and everything for my team and the coaching staff. And they're going to get the biggest competitor they've ever seen. And that's what I brought to OU, and that's always what I believed in.
Brock, I don't know if that's why they drafted Baker Mayfield. It was probably his accuracy and his arm strength and his playmaking ability and everything else he did that probably made him go number one overall.
Mm-hmm.
If I were in Cleveland, the number one thing I would want was what he just said.
Yep.
Do you want to come here and be a hero? Like, no, not do you want to go to the Yankees and win their 97th championship. Congratulations. Whoop-de-doo. Do you want to go to the Mariners? Do you want to go to the Reds, a team that's been star forever, and actually bring back a championship to a team that is desperate for it? Yep. That's where glory is. And I love that Baker Mayfield. Yeah, I want to go to a rotten organization. I want to go to the L.A. Clippers of the NFL, the Cleveland Browns, the mistake by the lake, a total disaster. And when I win there, then I'll show you just how good I really am. I love the attitude. You showed it last night.
You did. You did. And that attitude just, it instilled, he said belief there a number of different times, but you just instill confidence, even when they dropped the ball. I think that was one of the more impressive things. 17-23, he had three or four drops. I mean, he could have been 21-23. Now, thankfully, the Jets dropped an interception in the end zone. Otherwise, it's 14-3, and this isn't as easy a game and everything else. But he dropped it.
Mm-hmm.
He threw it 152 miles an hour, and it went off the shoulder pads of that Jets guy. So if you're going to be wrong, throw it really hard. That was Brett Favre's philosophy a lot of times. It worked for him, avoiding just at least a few interceptions. But he just instilled confidence in the people, and I do. I do think that there is a connection here. I have said for years, and maybe I'm wrong on this, or I've just got to come to terms, that relating to your teammates with Russell, right, relating, you just got to be one of the guys. No, that's just not who he is. Russell's one, though, that can command incredible respect from his teammates. That, to me, is where Russell is wired to do it. He's not Baker Mayfield. He's not that. Even yesterday, listen to his entire press conference, he'll never put anything out there. He's going to be guarded. He's going to protect everybody else. He's never going to even say things like that. He's just going to be more guarded. And that can garner incredible respect. And I think that that's got to be his just modus operandi here from this Sunday moving forward, is just make the people around you better. You want to be the greatest of all time. Russell has said that. I want to be the greatest of all time. Well, what have Tom Brady done and what are Aaron Rodgers doing right now? Those two right now that are the greatest going. It doesn't matter what Tom has around him. He instills belief in him.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Deion Branch, come on in. Can't play anywhere else, but come on in. You know, just come on in, and I will get the most out of you. Aaron Rodgers had a slew of guys through the years. I will get the most out of you. To me, that's got to be some of Russell's mindset coming this weekend. Instead of, I don't know, I don't trust Jerron Brown here. I'm going to be really guarded with it. Nope, you got to trust him. You got to do it. Even if it means a pick, even if it means doesn't come out of break, you have got to instill some of that confidence in the people around you. And you know, obviously a different, totally different scenario for Baker that hasn't done anything, got everything to gain last night as he's coming in and just playing with his hair on fire.
But that's how he is. I mean, he's just brash, and I think that's part of the charm of and why he's going to be such an interesting fit in Cleveland. I think those people are starved for a Baker Mayfield to show up, be brash, put Cleveland on their back, and hopefully bring them to the playoffs. And I hope John Clayton's wrong. I hope they win more than five games. I hope they win 8 or 9 and maybe sneak into the playoffs in the AFC this year. I think it'll be a blast. I think it'd be good for football to have Cleveland be good again and to have Baker Mayfield actually playing well. And as for your boy, Sam Darnold, he's got a lot of skill, and he makes a lot of turnovers.
Yep.
He turns the ball over a lot, man.
Yeah, that last interception, man.
He turns the ball over a lot.
That was one of those just all the wires totally crossed in order to throw that ball. Mm. And by the way, can we talk about Jermaine's catch on 4th and 10 right before that? I know Jermaine's made some unbelievable catches. Curse, was that about as good a catch as you're ever going
to
see?
That went as far to the edge of his fingertips as I think a ball can go if you're watching.
And he's out there blocking last night. Yeah. Just a total team guy. Good for you,
Jermaine.
You
know who else I saw blocking as a wide receiver last night? G's kid. Dude, I watched quite a bit of Eastside Catholic. Baby G, G Scott's son, playing for Eastside Catholic. Not only are my friends texting me like, dude, G's kid is a beast. Like, dude, he's good.
Yep.
But he's downfield blocking on some running plays and screens and stuff.
Really cool.
Yeah, it was good to see.
Wasn't it just a cool night of football? I mean, wasn't it just a cool night for the Thursday for the NFL?
Huh? The first half was awful.
Was it? I didn't see the first half.
Great.
I didn't see the first half.
I'm not trying to be that guy, but the Thursday night.
No, you are that guy that Pete cusses at and yells at. No, you are that guy.
Recency bias. It was a fantastic fourth quarter. Great finish. Darnold, Mayfield, the first quarter with Tyrod and Darnold going back and forth.
I believe you. I didn't see it. So for me, it was a great. I honestly think the NFL has been awesome so far this year. It's been a really fun first few weeks of the NFL, and it's just too bad. A lot of it's tainted by the fact that the Seahawks have looked like dreck offensively to the point where they're just not competing with the other. It's been fun. Teams that aren't generally fun have played fun games. I was not even a little bit excited for Baltimore-Cincinnati last weekend or last Thursday, and that ended up being a really good game.
And then you got the chaos in Pittsburgh, and they go down and play Fitzpatrick. Been one of the great stories on Monday night, right?
It's like almost every game. And Niners-Lions ended up being a fun game to watch. I know the Niners ended up pulling out late. But it just feels like, I mean, that Packers-Vikings game this past week was a blast. Titans-Texans was a close game late. The Saints game last week was a good one. The Chiefs have been fun to watch, beating the Steelers in a really close game.
Young blood, man.
Right? Like, it's just, but all of a sudden, the NFL, I know you can sort of talk, and maybe the ratings are going to go down and dip here for a little bit, and maybe some of the hysteria that was around the NFL in a positive way 5 years ago will subside. But, man, I think the league has been really, really fun to watch through its first 2+ weeks. And now it's up to the Seahawks because they're going to need to continue that. We're going to have open phone lines for you guys. I'm going to bet there's a lot of Seahawks offense calls that are going to be a part of that. That's coming up in 20 minutes right after this. One injury in the spot's bad. What does two mean? It's next on Brock and Salk.
Good news.
Yeah!
Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
All right, time for a little good news, bad news, no news, and we're going to open up these phone lines here in 15 minutes. Open lines on whatever you guys have to say.
HR's
I know, HR's here.
Kyle.
I know.
I think it's because Kyle, a decade ago?
No, I think it's about him showing up to work looking like he's ready to go to sleep. It's a cry for help. HR's got to come down and deal with that.
Get Kyle's name out your mouth. He doesn't look that bad. He looks great. He looks like he has pride in his team.
Right.
Leave him alone.
Is this not what you wear before bed?
No, I would wear a hooded sweatshirt to bed. This is true.
As someone else who has struggled with contact issues, they're real, okay?
Come back and see.
Whoa. You don't wear a hooded sweatshirt to bed.
Oh, of course, yeah. I like to.
That's so hot.
And wool socks, too?
Absolutely.
You and Lydia, I am... I'm What's in the news?
Brock, I wear wool socks every day from September to June.
What is in the news?
Good news, bad news, no news.
Justin Britt and Ethan Posick sat out practice yesterday for the second consecutive day.
Yeah, that's bad news. I don't think Britt's going to play this week. I think that that shoulder, and that's another unfortunate, unintended consequence of Russell's fumble in the final minutes there is Justin had to dive in and his shoulder gets all compromised. Posick's battling an ankle. I hope he practices today. I don't want to see an O-line that features Effetti, Fluker, Joey Hunt, J.R. Sweezy. I don't want to see that. I don't think Russell wants to see it. I don't think you 68,000 in the stands want to see it. So right now that's bad news. I'm hoping to see good news with Ethan practicing today.
Yeah, I would say at this point it's no news on Justin Britt. I mean, we've known that he's hurt. And, you know, if you were reading our new guy, Jake Heaps at 710sports.com, even Jake was saying that it sounded like it's going to be a little ways before before Justin Britt returns. He actually wrote, big blow. Seahawks are going to be missing the leader and anchor on the O-line. Hard to replace. Also, this is more than a day-to-day situation. He'll be out an extended period from what I have heard. So we'll wait and see on that. But the Posick thing, I really hope he plays.
Now, it's interesting.
I think
with
you could survive losing one of these guys and getting Fluker back, but I don't want to see two of those guys.
If it were a serious shoulder deal with Britt, like a torn labrum or something of that nature, I think they would slide Posick to center. So I don't know how serious it is.
But it could be extended and still be 2 or 3 weeks.
It could. And if that's the case, you're probably going to go with little Joey Hunt.
Yeah, you should. Of course you think so.
Next.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Nelson Cruz says he wants to play in Seattle in 2019.
Good news.
Why does he want to do that?
I don't know.
Well, he's not going to play in the National League, so that now limits him to 15 teams in the American League. A bunch of them already have designated hitters. So the market, I'll be very curious to see. Now, the market could also learn from J.D. Martinez last year where they played games with him, and all of a sudden he's been an unbelievable igniter, helping the Red Sox to more regular season wins than they've ever had in their history of their program. Because all the dudes continue to do is hit bombs every single year. They're one of the most productive Mariners hitting home runs year after year after year after year.
There's no reason
team
for the
friendly
Mariners
deal.
Not to bring him back.
Team friendly deal. You do this deal right.
Yeah, there's
now.
No reason not to bring him back. Even if you decide you're going to sell at the end of this season, Nelson Cruz, he won't bring you
Who's
anything
he
in a trade. Right,
who
you're
would
not
he
blocking,
be blocking
some other DH.
Daniel Vogelbach.
You probably bring him back. There's
it's
no
one of my favorite Mariners
to.
Of all time, and
I would
hope
agree.
He retires as a Mariner.
Great
I
last name too.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Can we get an update on the
Bruce Tamales?
On the tamales?
Kyle's been taken away by HR. Kyle's not even in the room anymore.
Can I get a little tamale update?
We haven't made the tamales yet.
We're still waiting to make the tamales.
You'll know because I'll bring you tamales.
All right.
Monday? Possibility?
Maybe, maybe not. Okay. We might freeze the stuff and do it later.
Okay.
Frozen tamales.
I'm sorry to let you down.
Yeah, it's a little bummer. I've been counting on your tamale party for lunch on Monday.
I'm sorry, Saul.
All right.
Didn't mean to let you down. The Cougs are 4.5-point underdogs at USC tonight.
That's great news.
Speaking of letting people down. You get a long, proud history of it.
Hey, that's not nice.
But it's also true.
I feel comfortable saying now that Kyle walked out
right.
of the room.
I mean, look, I'll say it when Kyle's here. I like the Cougs, and I hope
news.
They win.
I'm going to say it's great news. History. They're relevant. They're playing in prime time tonight, 7 o'clock on ESPN. It's must watch. This is a game changer right here. It's a game changer for Mike Leach. I think for his stock after this season as well, as he continues and always seemingly looks abroad and afar to see if there's a better fit for him. But these are the games that he's won. I mean, these are the games with a first-year quarterback that he just flings it all over the field. There's no pressure on Mike Leach and the Cougs. There is so much stinking pressure on Clay Helton and that program down at USC that's off to an awful start.
Yeah, and Minshew's the kind of kid who thrives in that spot, right? Like, hey, let's go, man. Well, Uncle Rico.
He could throw 5 touchdowns. He could throw 5 picks.
Yeah, but he's just going to go out there and do his thing.
That's like a wazoo quarterback.
And you're right, man. If they beat USC, they're right back to where they were last year, and it's on for the rest of the year. So I'm pretty psyched. I'm excited for this one tonight.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Tiger Woods and Ricky Fowler are tied for the lead at the Players' Championship.
Man, two guys that just can't close, or at least not recently.
Mm-hmm. You rooting for Tiger?
No, you know
I'm
not.
Come on, Salty.
I do not root for Tiger.
Or golf, you're not rooting for Tiger to win this $10 million championship at the end of the year.
I have
been in the 2019 season, and oh my gosh, Tiger's been there. Tiger's been there. Tiger's been there. Tiger actually wins this thing.
Yawn.
And wins $10 million bucks and now points to 2019 for even bigger for the game of golf. Good news.
Yeah, I'll be rooting for Ricky a little bit. I mean, it'll be nice to see Ricky win the whole thing. How cool would that be? Ricky Fowler, who is like one of the true great guys in the game, who's always in the
top
five.
Does he celebrate other people's wins more than any other player in the history of golf? He does. He's out there seemingly at the 18th green, especially if it's a newcomer or somebody new that wins. It's awesome. I love that. But for golf, it'd be better if Tiger wins.
You know who's kind of lurking out there that I always root for, and he hasn't won much, is Jason Day. Like, I love Jason Day. I know he's always a problem.
No, he's got vertigo.
He's got
wrist, he's got finger, he's got shoulder, he's got rib cage, he's got abdominal, he's got a hip pointer, he's got the flu, he's got allergies,
that's
he's got hyperextended toe.
That's why
I want two birds with a feather.
He's got knee tendonitis.
I can relate.
He's got vertigo. Do you want me to continue?
Yeah, I like that about him. I can relate.
It's going to be a really bad influenza season in Australia. He's already prepped for it. He's gotten 6 flu shots.
Would you shut up?
This is maybe the best news of all time.
Yeah,
Salk and Howdy going to a country music concert together tonight.
It's true. True story with our wives.
That's right.
Yeah. Voluntarily.
What?
The Salks and the Howdies.
Really?
That's right.
Yep.
And?
Except that's not Heather's last name. And I don't think Melissa's last name is Howdy either. But still, the Salks and the Howdies will be heading to go see Aaron Crawford tonight at the Little Red Hen, our guy.
We're going to be given Evergreen until we die.
Exactly, man. We're going to go watch Aaron Crawford
tonight. Howdy, you going to try to get yourself up on stage for a little bit?
Oh. I was hoping I was going to be able to sing with him a little bit. It'd be nice.
I bet he'll call you up.
I don't see any reason why you couldn't. Just go take the mic.
Might as well.
Would you get up there, Salk? You have a couple pops in you tonight, and Howdy's all cocksure walking up to the stage ready to sing.
Nope.
Come on, Mike.
Nope.
More importantly, what would be your country song of choice?
I don't know any country songs.
You know zero. You don't know Friends in Low Places or anything.
I know the chorus of it.
I got Friends in Low Places.
I've heard people sing
We sung it together at that Irish pub in Dublin.
You don't know a Johnny Cash song? No, zero?
Not really. You consider Johnny Cash like straight country? Like that's that.
Yeah, actually.
All right. I mean the sort of new terrible country is what I'm talking about. Okay. That's the stuff I don't really know. Gotcha. Like your boy Garth Brooks and stuff. Like that's just awful. Is that new country?
You know what? Just watch your mouth.
What do you mean? I really, really hate that kind of music.
He's going to love it when we play the Boys of Fall here.
Thank you.
Please don't do
Please
that.
Do
Brock's,
that.
Brock's made me listen to that before. It's terrible.
Brings a tear to my eye every single time.
Text message, are Salk and Howdy going to be sitting in general admission, or are we going to be in the Crawford boxes?
Nice, because it's an Aaron Crawford show.
All right, the phone lines are open. Let's go. 206-421-3776. Yeah, you want to talk golf, Tiger, Seahawks, Huskies, Shoddy.
Cougs.
Like, gosh, it's all out there, man. Huge football weekend plus a lot of other things going on. 206-421-3776. Give us a take that's on your mind. Tell us something that you've been wanting to get
Make
off your
hot.
Chest all
I want
week.
A hot take.
We want to hear from you guys now. 206-421-3776. It's next. Brock and Salk.